Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's popping, people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
As this is the last episode of season one, I want to take this opportunity to thank you, Adam, for giving me creatively and in terms of having a bloody good laugh the best year of my life. None of this would have happened if you had not drunkenly proposed it one rainy night in England over a couple of jars of the black stuff. You are the technician of thought in all of it, so thank you, brother, and thanks for being you.
On today's episode, we will be talking about No One Will Save You. This is a 2023 film directed by Brian Duffield and stars Caitlin Dever, Lauren L. Murray and Dane Rhodes. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. An exiled, anxiety-ridden homebody must battle an alien who's found its way into her home. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
No one will save you.
A lonely girl in a busy world.
No one will save you.
You're not safe when you're all alone.
No one will save you.
An alien is breaking in your home, yeah.
No one will save you.
They will snatch your body and control your naughty.
I couldn't, I got shy.
It was so good.
No, I don't like it.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Just 3 days after the film was released on Hulu, Stephen King gave it the highest praise on his Twitter account, where he posted this comment. No One Will Save You is brilliant, daring, involving, and scary. You have to go back over 60 years to a Twilight Zone episode called The Invaders from 1961 to find anything remotely like it. Truly unique.
I've always admired Stephen King's taste, but also his writing. And he writes very similar to what I watched him watching this. Creepy. It's not something screaming and running at you. It's also when it's just looking at you and just observing you and being very subtle. That can be just as terrifying. And I think I agree with him. For me, it's a big mashup between, say, Signs, Body Snatchers, but also Fire in the Sky and that. And it's always creeped me out, UFOs, always.
To have that praise from the godfather of horror, Stephen King, if I was Brian Duffield or anyone involved in making this film, I would be so pumped because that's the highest praise. I could have a film out and it gets slated by other critics or media publications, the internet, the general populace. And if I had Stephen King saying, you know what, this was brilliant, to have him say it's brilliant, daring, involving and scary, like that would be... the pièce de résistance for me.
I think it's impressive when he drops praises to stuff. Like, I know he did it with Peaky Blinders as well. He went watching this really neat British program called Peaky Blinders.
Did he?
And then the viewership just went straight up. Yeah, man, he likes Peaky Blinders.
Imagine having that pull on people. Like, that's basically certifies it, doesn't it? If he comes out and gives his stamp of approval on a horror film, it's going to do quite well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Totally.
The alien design is heavily based on the sketches done in America in the 1950s, described by abducted people and people that had close encounters of the third kind.
Like Roswell, that sort of big head, small body.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the variation of the aliens in this.
That was refreshing, wasn't it?
It was, because when they're like copy-paste or terracotta army, it's kind of like, oh, they're all the same. But this one, you could actually pinpoint individuals within the aliens, which was really cool.
It's a rare and beautiful thing to see in this sort of film, isn't it? Like you say, we've seen loads of films where you see several aliens or hundreds of aliens, but they're carbon copy.
Yes.
Like you say, Terracotta Army is a great analogy of it, because they look exactly the same. In this one, we spoke about it earlier, there's like three different types
distinct
of aliens.
Distinct ones, yeah.
And it's almost, they're like almost ranks within an army type. Mm-hmm. You've got the brute, you've got the really smart one.
Telepathic one.
Yeah, you've got one that uses telekinesis. Yeah. And I, that was one of the things I liked about the film is that they didn't have loads and loads of different aliens, but enough about the three or four you see, that enough differences between them that made each one independently interesting. And I really appreciate that.
The gnarly little scrapper was the scariest for me.
Really?
Because he couldn't do telekinesis, but he was like the dog of an alien. It's like that was their dog. He's very on all fours, but also really observant, but he's grabbing and trying to bite. He messed with my head.
No, the one I didn't like the most was the Peter Crouch spider alien thing. That one fucked me up.
Oh, he's big.
Yeah, so for context, the one I'm speaking of is bigger than a house, especially when it stands up and it does this weird contemporary dance thing. Yeah, to like communicate with the mothership and stuff like that. But each one of them individually, there's something menacing about all of them. Like you say, the scrapper, the spider crouch one, and then the one that's telekinesis, the one that's more intelligent and sort of floats around, that's not really bothered by anything. Yeah. I think the alien design, considering they're ones we've seen time and time again, Duffield and everyone involved managed to make them refreshing and interesting, exciting. So,
adapted the original sort of blueprint for Alien 101.
Yeah, definitely. Final fact, there are only 5 words spoken throughout the entire film.
A madness, because I didn't know that until I finished the film. Now, you might be asking yourself, how did you not know that? And it's like, because it wasn't necessary, so I didn't notice it.
Well, I think it speaks to the strength of a film, if only afterwards you're thinking, did anyone speak? Did anyone say much? Because if you're that engrossed, if you're that captivated in watching a film, they're doing everything properly, that you're not sitting there going, well, someone needs to talk soon because I'm fucking bored.
Yeah.
There was none of that.
That's like All Is Lost of Redford, isn't it? Robert Redford at sea. There's like no words because he's on his own and his ship hits a little shipping container and he sinks and he's just at sea on his own. So there are no words. It's very minimal, but why would there be? Yeah. Unless you're someone who has to talk out your words to yourself to just try and focus. But I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And if it did anything, it amplified her loneliness.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. If like you said, if she narrated everything that she was going through.
Oh, I'd hate that.
And if she's like, who's out there? What's going on? Like, oh, I'm coming down the stairs now. You'd be like, oh, man, nah. The fact that it's so quiet and like she's a solitary person, and you find out throughout the film the reasons why she's isolated, why she's on her own and stuff. I think that works so well that it reflects her as a person to be so quiet. She's withdrawn. She's away from everything else.
She's an alien.
And exactly that, yeah. And I think in that position, if I was in that position, there'd be a lot more screaming, a lot more shouting, a lot more swearing, a lot more shitting. But I wouldn't be walking around commentating on it. I wouldn't be going, oh, there's a massive fucking alien out there. Oh, shit, I'm shitting myself.
The most you'd get from me is fuck.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. And high-pitched squeals from me.
High-pitched, shrill scream.
I'd be bounding on all fours to try and run away quicker.
Yeah, my scream crosses genders, generations, and ages.
Yeah,
it is so high.
Yeah, one day we'll get you screaming on this podcast for the world to hear. What did you like about No One Will Save You?
So first thing that stood out for me, and I do love this, I've mentioned it previously in film, is the rule of thirds. So I love it in photos, films, and paintings, but this film is wrought with it. So Exhibit A, the opening shot is a topographical shot of the car driving, and on the far left is a body of water reflecting the sky back into the viewer's eyes. But then the car's moving, that's well off into the left, so it gives you a lot of space to see. But my eyes went straight to the water, and it's like, well, they're showing you the sky because that's where the alien comes from. It's almost Spielbergian in that sense. I love that. And Exhibit B, you know, when the alien first enters her house and she's peering down the stairs. The alien's actually in the top left of the screen. It's not in the bang in the middle. It's top left. So that's that law of third again.
You almost have to look for it, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I like. Yeah. It leaves it open for you to go looking for it as well. And sort of see the shot how she would see him. And Exhibit C was after getting gossed on by her dead friend's mum. She spat on her and then she ran off to this like muraled wall with a woman with red hair painted on the wall. And she's in the far left of the screen.
Yeah.
And what it does is it opens up the shot for interpretation. And I love it because it's not always front and center, which is more realistic of life. Like, in my opinion, it highlights like her loneliness. And there's these empty two-thirds in so many shots in the film.
Yeah, I was thinking after you saying that, maybe it is an analogy of her being away from everything else.
Yeah, because no one else is in the shot.
Yeah, exactly. So she, even when she's on her own, she feels like she's isolated.
Yeah.
And fighting her own fight separately from everyone else. Yeah, nice.
Even in the town, she looked a bit lonely and empty. But I love it when they do that. It's my favourite in terms of photos as well. The photo behind you. That Banksy one.
Oh, yeah.
With the German officer looking out on the lake. That's a law of third.
Yeah. So it's basically, for someone that doesn't know, it's where the focus of the art, the picture, the film isn't bang center where you sort of expect it to be.
Yeah.
It's off to the side.
Antagonist, protagonist could be off to left and off to the right, and they leave a wider shot to show you the scene, which I really like.
That's interesting you bring that up, because that's not something I picked up on, but I did pick up on like the cinematography of the film, like how good it looked. Mm. And I know it's a new film, and I know when you're doing a science fiction film that include aliens and stuff, the scope, it can go anywhere, because it's all imagination, isn't it?
Mm.
But even with that in mind, the look of this I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I've seen it twice within the space of 4 or 5 days. After your like there, I definitely want to watch it again to point those bits out.
Yeah, look good.
Any more likes?
Yeah, Caitlin Devers. Mm. She just added her name to the great female action heroes and proves that the girls can do it just as good as the men.
Yeah.
I think this performance is up there with, say, Sigourney, Uma Thurman, Charlize Theron in action roles, because she's just a badass. But she doesn't even know that's inside her.
Yeah.
And that look of terror that she has when she first sees something moving in her house, oh, man, that's testament to talent, because... her eyes, I actually got goosebumps just saying that, because her reaction is so real. Like when you think it's scary enough that a human being could be in your house at night and your door's wide open.
Mm.
But even then she can't turn away, because a part of her's like, I don't think that's a human.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And I think you add in that element of she's doing all this fantastic work amongst CGI and on her own with minimal dialogue.
Mm.
To be that impressive, that captivating, when you're the sole focus of a film, that takes real talent.
I think I'd lap that up if I had an opportunity as an actor, let's say, and there was no lines and it was all physical, it was all Andy Serkis-esque, it was facial expressions. Hard, because words can help define your expression. Like,
yeah.
Words define what you're trying to convey. You without words it can be harder, but I think I just love the fact that I'm not going in with any, you have to remember your lines, so you can focus entirely on performance.
Exactly. I can imagine it being very challenging but immensely rewarding, because like you say, you're not having to remember anything. The only direction you can be given, I'm like, suppose, is ramp it up a bit, tone it down a little, run faster there, do this. It's more about actions rather than dialogue. Mm. And yeah, I'll tailgate on that, because Caitlin Dever's one of the best things about this film as far as I'm concerned.
Great.
As well. I think it takes true talent to carry the weight of a film on your shoulders by yourself. And she spends most of the runtime on screen, like I said, with CGI otherworldly beasties. And the way she executes her performance, I consider it perfect.
Mm.
I couldn't think of anything else I could ask from her as an actor, as a lead.
No.
Considering she does this with only speaking a few lines of dialogue as well, I think she deserves huge praise for her efforts.
100%.
And I can imagine now, off the back of this, she'll have a lot more big leading roles.
Well, I'd never seen her in a film. I'd only seen her in the miniseries Dope Sick with Keaton and Unbelievable with Merritt Weaver and Toni Collette. And I loved her in both of them. I thought she was excellent. Like, she plays a rape victim in Unbelievable and a drug addict in Dope Sick. So that's two huge characters.
Meaty roles.
Really effective. She played them really well. And this is the first time I've seen her in a movie. And yeah, it's now she's been a victim of alien abduction and stuff.
Yeah, poor woman's been through it, right?
Mm.
Yeah, I've seen her in, Dope Sick. And I saw her in Booksmart, where I thought she was fantastic in that as well. And as now she's got a bit older and she's doing roles like this in the lead independently, I think, it won't be long until she's headlining huge blockbusters.
Mm.
I think she's got a very bright future ahead of her.
I really believe her.
Yeah.
I really do. That's a fun little fact, actually. I might drop it. So she was in Unbelievable with Merritt Weaver, and Merritt Weaver is the girl in the pharmacy in Signs.
Oh, wow.
Talking to Mel Gibson, going, can I talk to your father?
Yeah.
And she's like, these people came in the shop the other day and they're talking about the end of the world. And I was just like, oh, little Link. I like my Link games. Try and link Mel Gibson to some dude from Coronation Street. It can be done.
Yeah.
You can easily do it. Yeah.
I'd love to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
Any more likes?
The film must be doing something right, because I didn't once question the lack of dialogue. We spoke about it, but it was kind of like, I just got to the end and I was like, no, there was no dialogue, because I had a little read up on it after and I was like, wow, I didn't question it. I wasn't like, I was sitting there like at the start of There Will Be Blood, I'm fully aware there's no words being spoken. Like, I remember hitting like a 6 or 7 minute bit and I went, not one word has been spoken.
Yeah.
I didn't have that in this.
No.
I didn't notice it.
Because you're entirely captivated.
Scared.
Yeah. And the the way the film's pacing is, it just starts, doesn't it? You've got maybe, what, 5 minutes or less of exposition where you're seeing her. You gradually find out that she's a bit of a loner. You find out that she's despised in her local community, and that all happens relatively straight away.
Because of doing something when she was 9, yeah. 10, 11.
But then you get straight into the action and you see the first sighting of the aliens, and then it just picks up the pace from there. So, yeah, the lack of dialogue, again, I completely agree with you, because that's one of the things that really resonated with me as one of the film's biggest selling points. I think it's a brave move to have next to no speech in the film.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of words makes the audience focus more on what is happening. And this decision adds layers to this sort of suspenseful and intriguing 90-minute runtime. When a film follows the story of a singular character and limits their conversation with anyone else, it kind of assists you in keeping you invested, because you're solely focused on her, her reactions, what she sees, what she feels. You're not thinking about who's this person, what are they bringing to the table, why are they being like that, where are they from? All of these questions, they don't come up because you're solely focused on her plight.
That's what I love about survival films. They do have a way of keeping their hooks in you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I've seen lesser films where it's got this sort of template. It's got that formula of we are watching one person against a beast or an otherworldly force, and you sort of clock out relatively quick.
Yeah.
These sort of films, they insist that you buy into it early doors. And for me, I certainly did with this one.
I was captivated and terrified.
Mm. Any more likes?
There's plenty, but I'm good.
Yeah, a thing that stood out most for me, it's top of my like list, is how ambitious it was. No One Will Save You breathes a breath of fresh air into the alien invasion genre.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise of an extraterrestrial home breaking is one that I haven't seen before. And I applaud the experimental vision from director Brian Duffield. I don't know about you, but I did think the first half is much stronger than the second. But I do give huge kudos to any filmmaker who tries to put their own unique spin on a well-trodden tale.
I did wonder where they might go in the second half. So, like you, I enjoyed the first half a lot more, because it's always going to be more entertaining seeing the introduction of like this scary, malevolent presence. But yeah, second half, I was like, well, how are they going to end this? Are they going to go Signs route? Look, the humans will out and they won and the aliens have retreated. Or are they going to go total body snatchers, totally assimilated?
Yeah.
I didn't know where it was going to go.
I think the first half, when you're asking the questions of what, why, it's far more captivating and engrossing. When you start to learn that they are body snatchers, when you start to learn that it's taken over this whole town, it's a much bigger picture than an independent one-on-one versus an alien and a human. It sort of, my interest did waver a little, but to be fair, by the end, it did pick up again.
It did, yeah.
Yeah,
it did pick up.
When the aliens started developing and you started to learn more about them as this force, this threat, my interest did spike right back up.
I think I probably would have enjoyed it more if it was a more personal, isolated incident rather than a global one.
When it started, I was like, if this is just a pure one-on-one.
Amazing.
In the house, like she can't get out, it can't get out. Mm. And it's that question of would you rather be under threat in your own surroundings, or would you just want to be out in the open where you've got more resources and stuff you can hide in bigger places and things like that?
Well, because it could have spoke to the, say she suffered from agoraphobia or she never wanted to leave the house because of what happened. You could still have that storyline. And she was so terrified to leave the house that she actually is locked within the confines of her grounds and her house to have it with the alien. And it's almost like speaks to that.
Yeah, so it's not only is she fighting an alien, she's fighting her own inability to leave the fucking house.
Yeah.
We just make this film better.
We did just make it better.
Yeah.
Yes. Why is she... I got to ask, why is she 18 coming on 80, though?
What mean?
Like...
youthful face, old soul?
Well, kind of. Like, you know, like knitting and old dance shoes and being near a pond, having a tea and a book. Yeah. Like, she doesn't strike me as... So what is she in? She's got to be, what, 23, 24?
Yeah.
Something like that.
White women Instagram, isn't it?
How old is she in real life?
26.
26, okay.
I think.
Yes, white women's Instagram.
Yeah, it's very like...
Etsy.
Yeah.
Etsy page.
Yeah.
Candles and burlap sacks.
Yes.
Little pumpkins, etc.
Yeah.
You know the song.
That's a good question. I don't know. I think maybe so you're led to believe, you're led to know fairly early on in the film that she's lost her mum.
Yeah, that's
recently.
True.
And from what you learn in the film, it feels like she was isolated into this home with just her and her mum.
So she's taking comfort from replicating her mum.
That's what I think.
Asked and answered.
Yeah, that's how I feels it.
You did it. You did it. Thank you.
What didn't you like about No One Will Save You?
This is a strange one, but I have to say I dislike that explainable things can scare us. So case in point, 9 minutes 53 seconds, her lights flicker on. Well, at 3 minute 45 second, my hall light flickered on and off rapidly.
I'd be out.
I think it's a loose bulb or the electric's funny or a rat snored through something. But before it happened to her, it happened to me.
Yeah,
and I was sitting in the dark starting this film. I was only 3 minutes 40 in and my hallway lights have just gone. And I've looked and I was like, that has never done that. And I jumped up, turned on the lamp in the living room. I was like, oh, what the hell was that? So I went and switched the light off because I thought it was off anyway. It wasn't. And then I sat back down, turned the light back off, sat down. And then 9 minutes in, it happened to her. And I'm like, why does it scare us? It's explainable. It's probably a loose connection, but to me, a ghost had entered my house.
A ghost, or an alien. Okay.
Either. Something scary, something untoward is in here and wants my ass.
Yeah, it does.
And it annoys me. It annoys me that explainable things scare us. A knock at the door, you know, a door going, oh.
Yeah.
But the window's open.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I mean, horror's the only medium that can do it. Porn will get you hard. Horror will scare the hell out of you.
Okay.
Other than that, well, drama will make you cry, I suppose.
Comedy will make you laugh.
My point's invalid.
Food will make you shit.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you get what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Things that shouldn't scare you do.
I mean, it's like if I'm staying at home on my own, I only live with my partner, who's a 31-year-old female, 5'2".
Yes.
I don't think about feeling unsafe at home.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm staying there on my own for a night, I hear something. I'm like, what? And I'm like, and then in my head, I'm like, what are you doing? If there was a threat, you would have, I'm 6 foot. I would be the one that have to go and tackle the threat.
Yeah.
But because my short fiance isn't there, I'm like, what the fuck's happening?
You're really hitting home on this willow thing, right?
Yeah. Well, she's a small person. She knows she is.
A small person.
She is. But that's what I'm saying. Like you say, it's explainable. So I know it's the floorboards. Mm. I know it's my next door neighbours making some noise. And when I'm in the bed with her and we're both going to sleep, I don't bat an eyelid. But when she's not there, I'm like, what's that? Where's my baseball bat? What do I need to do? Who is it? Who have I got to fight?
It's been years since I've had to turn the light on and hold a pillow to watch a film.
This one, really.
Signs. I mean, I went and saw Signs at the cinema 3 times, and I must have been 15 or something.
Yeah, that'll get you.
And I loved it. I adored it. It was scary. It made me jump. It was, and UFOs are scary. Like to me, they're scary, just like The Exorcist or sharks are. The way they build it up in this, like, you know, it's a jump scare. There's going to be a jump scare, but also sometimes the camera lets you look at the alien for a prolonged amount of time.
Which you're almost not used to.
No, it's uncomfortable because they tend to obscure the enemy until the very last scene and it reveals itself to be something Peter Crouch.
And then normally in these sort of films, you see the fight, the inevitable conflict, the battle, where the humans are triumphant, then you see them for a long period of time fighting.
The get ready montage.
Exactly.
Sharpening pencils, lubing up.
Yeah. Sticking some ham in your bag. All the classics. No, I get you. Yeah. I think my top dislike is just something I don't like in film is jump scares. I just don't like them, man.
Mm, I'm surprised you watch this because I know we've mentioned only before, you do struggle with the horror genre.
Yeah, I'm for this podcast, I'm trying to sort of broaden my horizons.
But this is quite a strong one to start with in terms of jump scares.
My worst ones are Possession or Spiders. So if there's a film about possessed spiders, I'm fucked. But anything Possession, anything where it's like someone being possessed by the devil or a demon, count me out. I find sort of alien films far more easier to digest.
Arachnacist.
Is that?
Possessed Spider.
Is that exist or have you just?
I just made it up.
Oh, right.
A blend between arachnophobia and exorcist, Jesus. So arachnacist.
That sounds horrific.
Or exorobia.
Oh, God. No, I don't like that. But yeah, like jump scares, I just don't like them. I had my headphones on while watching this one and the jump scares jolted through me like a bolt of lightning.
Mm.
They were successful in their mission to make me jump, but I just don't like them for I am a wuss.
For I am a wuss.
I am wuss.
Old English.
For I am wuss. I am. And I don't know about you, when I watch films, I can spot a jump scare a mile off. Doesn't matter. I can see it coming. I'm like, well, the jump scare is going to be behind you, or it's going to be when you pull back that door, it's going to be there.
Sometimes,
like, it's there.
Sometimes they double bluff you now, though.
Yeah.
So in this, they do it. When she's under the table,
you
see something fall, and it looks like the alien's gone down into a press up to look at her. And that's what makes you jump.
Yeah.
And then as the camera actually pans past her head, the alien's just looking at her on her other side, and it got me then.
Yes.
I'd already put the pillow back down.
When they misdirect you. When you think, okay, there's not the scare there, and then it's where you're not expecting it. That's masterful.
Well, it's like pitching and batting in baseball.
Yeah, but I hate it. I don't like that sort of roller coaster feeling in my stomach. I don't like it.
No.
I know people love their horror. I know people out there only watch horror films, and the scarier the better. For me, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed this film. There's certain horrors out there that do frighten the life out of me. But this one was intimidating but entertaining, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got any more dislikes?
Umin and Aaron in this one, but I would say it struggles to define itself because it's a bit of a mashup between Signs and Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Mm.
And I don't know if I would prefer one or the other.
Okay.
So it starts like Signs, very similar.
Yeah.
Really similar to Signs. You know, there's trash bins getting knocked over. It's on the roof. She sees it, but she doesn't see it. And then it's got Body Snatcher-esque in it. When she tries to, she thinks, fuck it, I'm going to leave this town. I wasn't getting on here anyway. No one likes me. And she jumps on a coach. And then this Donald Sutherland FedEx driver comes up and goes, and tries to get her. And I was like, well, that's like Body Snatchers. Like you say, it is a homage to them 90s Twilight Zone, that whole UFO trend that was so big in Americana. I think it does struggle a little to identify itself. I think I would have preferred her being entirely isolated. I would have liked to have maybe not seen the spaceship, just the aliens, and maybe it be a very isolated local incident. And towards the end of the film, the thing that actually cures her agoraphobia and not being able to stay in, not being able to leave the house, is that she goes through this horrific ordeal on her own, and she walks into town bloodied and beaten.
Yeah.
You know, and then eats a cheeseburger or something. Mm. Third dislike, just maybe the ending that she lived, the fact she lives in an alien society that's been assimilated now. Like the humans have been assimilated and they're all dancing like robots. I mean, what's the point in brainwashing? Why don't you just kill them? What are they doing? They're just watching them dance like puppets, like a zoo. I don't really understand it.
I think they're sort of trying, they're using her as like a scientific method to learn more. I think they're letting her, without snatching her body, because she's so isolated within her community, they're giving her the renewed joy of actually being part of something. So she's no longer on her own. And it doesn't bother her that all these people are being taken over by aliens, because she's no longer lonely.
Because she was an alien.
Now these aliens can spectate and learn about her as a human without having complete control, if that makes sense.
But she's not spectacular. She was a prepubescent girl who murdered her friend with a brick.
Yeah, but to an alien, how many people have they seen that have done that? Probably not many.
And to be honest, I don't think the aliens intended to give her special treatment until she macked three of their boys.
Yeah, they're like, oi, she's something else. Oi, she got bloody Kev, Dave and Barry. They're three of our biggest soldiers that wiped them out like that.
She didn't. Drop her in El Salvador. Drop her in a cartel world.
Mad
drop
skills.
Her in Iraq, Palestine. She will do people.
Yeah, I mean, if she's stoning friend at 9 or 10, there's a beast within.
She got promoted to the big leagues.
Yeah, and that's one of my dislikes, is that ambiguous ending. And I got to be honest, No One Will Save You had me in the palm of its hand for the first two acts.
Yes.
Whilst the visuals of the third act was impressive, and I was never once bored with this film.
No, I went bored.
The conclusion lessened what was a really creepy and captivating alien film that could have become a sci-fi indie classic had the ending not been that open-ended.
It was very, I would say it's actually very Stephen King, the ending.
Yeah.
He always liked to weird his audience out, even at the end. I think there's something to that. And the way she's dancing in this like little polka dot dress, and it's almost like post-World War II celebration, the glory days. And she's like dancing and the music's very...
I've got something in my pocket for you.
And it comes up with the old graphics for the end. So it's very... I think they tried to leave that creepy taste in your mouth as it ends. But I don't know. You know, sometimes you know what you like in films, and I would have preferred a more concrete ending.
Yeah.
More understandable.
I'd have just liked it to like end and... She's taken up to space and she lives there now.
Yeah. I thought maybe it would have been a good ending if they bring her on the ship but they finally do let her walk a little bit, and comes to a looking view window and just sees a whole planet. At first you think it's Earth and it isn't, because Africa's not Africa and the landscape's different. She realizes she's been taken to another planet.
Yeah,
I thought that would have been kind of good, because at least then she's not, you know, she's been taken to another planet because she doesn't feel that she belongs on this planet.
Yeah, I do. The more I think about it, I do think that ambiguity is put in there to open up a sequel. Mm. It feels like...
He spoke about potentially having a sequel.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. The way they'll probably have some tourists turn up to that town that's now populated by body snatching aliens, and then she's got to decide whether, do I tell these people what's happened here, or do I keep my ignorant, happy life?
The end of this will work if they then do a sequel where she breaks the brainwash trend, or she realizes this is immoral to keep these people under a leash. And then the end of this really does work if it becomes that. But I don't think you could ever get back that opening 40 minutes of this where it's so chilling.
The thing is, it looks like it's going to do well. It's only been out a while. And the longer it's out, we're approaching Halloween now. As it gets closer to that, more people will watch it in spooky season, all that stuff. I think it will pick up momentum. And going on a streaming service like Disney Plus, they'll throw money at any old shit. And this isn't any old shit, no. I don't think. I think there's enough there. If they had another film, a sequel for this, I enjoyed this one enough to watch it and give it a go. I do think the product would lessen if they did another one, but I would watch it because I'm a sucker.
Well, I'm watching it tomorrow night with the other half. That's how much I liked it.
Are you actually?
Yeah, I want to see jump.
Will you?
I do. Are you really? Yeah. Wild. I do want to see a jump, because I know it's going to shit her up. Because at its core, it is a woman on her own in a farmhouse. Mm. I remember my sister used to phone me up after watching an episode of Loofah, terrified because she was at home alone. She was like, can you come over and check under my bed and in the loft because of that guy in Loofah? I was like, no,
you're a fully grown person, people. No, I'm not doing
it. I will
that.
Not do it. And it is terrifying to be home alone. My God.
Did you think of like prank calling her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I know I'm a terrible person, but I don't have a sister. But if I did and they did that, I couldn't help myself but to phone up and be like, hello, what are you doing? Couldn't help myself.
You wouldn't, man. Not after your dad used to whisper up the stairs, exorcist.
Yeah, I think that's a story for another day.
Greatest stories. I've got to ask you a question, though. Why did that gnarly little alien, after fighting her for about 3 or 4 minutes after being bitten, after throwing water at her, why did he give her a little grace period to back off? Do you remember? He gets into the hall and she's moving backwards and he just stops and sits down like a little dog and he puts his hands together and he just watches her move back and he gives her a moment to recoup her energy.
I tell you what I think it is.
It really freaked me out.
Do you know what? I'll tell you what I think it is.
Says.
Have you seen elite boxers when they're having a fight? And they sort of put their hands down and they let the person punch them 2 or 3 times.
Mm.
They just go on, you can't touch me. Take 3 hits and then get back. I think it's that. Ooh. I think it's recoup.
Yeah, it was
readjust yourself.
Which is,
I am far more of a threat to you than you are to me.
Oh, I didn't like that.
So go on, run off a little bit more, and then I'll chase you because I'm having a great time here. I think it was that. I think.
Did you see
that,
as the door closed, it jumped up on the wall and it started moving slowly towards the wall? Yeah. I was like, I felt like I was constantly being chased watching this film.
Yeah, I when I watch these films and I think about how I would react and my tolerance to such things, I do fear my sort of knee-jerk reaction would be launching myself out the window. Just get out of there. Just done.
I would pay good money to see you get chased by a dog or something.
I love dogs.
No, like something that would freak you out.
A spider.
Well, yeah, but unless someone dressed a dog as a spider and it was nighttime and you were in a field, I'd just love something to chase you.
Oh, man.
I just want to see the fear. You screaming and running. I'd be on the floor laughing so hard.
Credit where credit's due. When I am scared, I'm not the manliest of men, but when I scream, I do deep man.
When I've tried to scare you with fake spiders and throw shit at you, like you remember when I used to do it with the wasps in the summer of discontent, and I'd throw I'd drop something on you and go, wasp, you go, oh!
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, ah!
Yeah, I do like that in my locker, I'm a massive wuss, as previously stated in this episode, but when when it comes to it, I scream like a real man.
You do.
And I like that.
You do.
My final dislike about this film was, in a film where there are body-snatching aliens invading Earth, breaking into homes and beaming up peeps onto their spaceship.
Peeps.
The fact that the lead didn't have a mobile phone was the most unbelievable aspect of the film.
Yeah, but she's 18 going on 80.
Yes, yes, she is. If she had a phone, maybe it would have forced dialogue, but the lack of a cell phone had me questioning the believability of a film where an alien spider, Peter Crouch, is bounding through the fields howling like a niche jungle ape. Now, for me, I couldn't... I know she's isolated. I know she's lonely. And I know she doesn't have anyone else. So if you don't have anyone, why would you have a phone? But she sells dresses. She sells dresses on the internet and stuff. So she's got to have... Sorry, I stopped. You might be wondering what's going on in the recording. There's a beam of light through your...
Oh, through, there's a spider.
No, but it's almost alien mystical type.
Oh.
Can you see it?
No, because my angle's different.
Yeah.
I can't see it. Okay. I thought it was a spider. I just got well scared.
Yeah.
Sorry.
At least you didn't scream. That would have been good, though.
Well, I had to find out what it was.
Yeah. So, yeah, that for me, that was a glaring
I kind of liked it. I didn't see a mobile in any of it.
But I couldn't believe that. She's got a business where she sells dresses online and stuff, and she doesn't have a phone.
Valid,
and
yeah.
I was like, and like she uses, tries to use her oldie-woldie home phone to contact the emergency services. And it's like, yeah, but you would have a phone, though. You would, because you're 20, you're in your 20s in America, in modern day, you would have a phone.
Is it set in the 90s or modern day?
It's modern day.
It is modern day.
Yeah, because you see that her mum on her tombstone is to 2009.
Oh, bang, yeah.
And 2019, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And in her letter to her dead friend that she deaded up with a rock, she's like, it's been 10 years and you find out that happened in 2012.
Deaded up with a rock. Could you just explain for our cousins across the pond who Peter Crouch is?
Oh, he is an exceptional man. He is a Premier League footballer, soccer, if you're from the States, and he is pure beanpole. He's 6'7" of awkward
gangle.
Length, gangly, daddy long legs length, but he had an exceptional touch for a football soccer player, and he's a funny dude. So, yeah, the spider aliens in this are all legs. And when I saw it, I was like, well, it's Peter Crouch, arachnid alien, isn't it? Of course it is.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I've got some questions. Would you rather be stuck at home on your own with a singular alien breaking in, or on their spaceship with a group of your mates?
Their spaceship with a group of mates.
For the laughs.
For the giggles.
For the shits and gigs.
For the bants.
For the bants.
For the bants. Like
boys bants on the alien ship.
Oh, guys, there's this weird jelly and you push one of your mates in it. And he comes out like the dude from RoboCop. Yeah. All melted and shit.
Yeah. It'd be a laugh, wouldn't it?
It would be a laugh. I mean, if you're with your friend, like I've always, like... I like snorkeling, but I don't like doing it alone. I'm scared to do it alone.
Yeah.
And so I would rather do snorkeling with a friend, because at least you're in it together. And even if you're scared, you're laughing because you're with a mate.
Yeah.
When you're on your own, in my head, I will be eaten by a shark within the next 3 swims.
Yeah, yeah.
So with friends, you can get through a lot. But on your own in a farmhouse, I would, oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
I mean, the argument to be in your home on your own with one of them is you know your surroundings. So you know to where the lights are, you know where there's a baseball bat, a knife, whatever it is you have to defend yourself.
Yeah.
On the spaceship, you're fully at there.
But like if a thief breaks into your house, shits on the floor and eats the sandwich you put in the fridge, you can never live there again. So if I had to ruck an alien in this house, I'd also have to sell it the next week.
But you would also become very wealthy on the back of it.
If you think?
Prove it, yeah.
If I could keep the corpse like she does in this, she basically, the first alien she kills, she just pops a bit of wood in its head and it sort of dies, and then she covers it up with her blanket. I absolutely love that she didn't find it and it had disappeared. I love that it was still there for a day later.
I thought it was going to go on that tried and tested trope of a horror. It's scuttered off somewhere.
No.
Like, oh, for fuck's sake.
I love that it just genuinely was a decaying corpse.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sad thing was, you'd think that would be an exciting part of the film, that she can get to the town and be like, there's an alien, I've killed something. And they come and they see it and they go, what the hell is that? None of that happens. And I actually think that was brilliant that it didn't happen, because she's hated by the town.
Yeah.
Suffer alone.
Even when she tried to go there for help, like the first person she sees, she got spits in her bloody face. And she's not going to look anywhere else, is she?
That is grim.
Yeah. Next question. No One Will Save You makes the bold decision to have hardly any dialogue. What film do you think would have been improved by having next to no speech?
Anything with Orlando Bloom in.
Just to shut him up?
Yeah.
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 That's fair. Mine would be Mad Max Fury Road. We spoke about it when we covered the film on this episode.
Yeah.
On this podcast, sorry.
Yeah. It didn't have much, but again, it didn't need any.
It could have just been just a mad car chase with minimal. Mm. Like Max doesn't say much, but some of the other cars do have a fair bit to say.
Yeah.
So that'd be one. And Book of Eli. I think post-apocalyptic worlds where you don't have to have that sort of mind-numbing small talk conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If the world's gone to shit, you don't have to have them little small talk chats, do you? Who gives a fuck? I don't care what you did at a weekend.
Any film with over-the-top narration. What's that bloody Hugh Jackman one I saw at cinema during lockdown?
Oh, Reminiscence.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Take all the dialogue out of that, turn it black and white, and it might have, because it was noir anyway. It should have been black and white.
Yeah, it was.
But bloody hell, that voiceover's in that. Oh, it was so annoying. Who is she? Where did she come from?
Yeah.
Kill me. I'm ready. Oh, it's that nonstop.
Yeah, it was relentless. No One Will Save You uses stereotypical alien design to portray their outer space threat.
Mm.
Do you think there is any truth in the way we perceive aliens, or is it a simple case of the look of them being the result of the imagery of the first person to design them?
I think they're trying to find something familiar but different to freak you out. Like it's bipedal, it's humanoid. But it's not. It's also got a huge head and large eyes, and it doesn't wear clothes. So it's to freak you out, because if you find something familiar in it, it's scary. The only aliens, I think, that probably exist are bacteria or something very small, single-cell organisms.
You think?
I think, yeah. It's scary to see something with a huge head, small body, but I'll be ultra-intelligent. Because you're like, well, how has it come to travel space when I'm physically bigger than it?
Like Warwick Davis. Edit that out. I couldn't resist. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Sorry. So you don't think there's any, it's not a case of there's no smoke without fire. You don't think that there's some element of truth to it because it's been depicted in a certain way for so many times.
Nah, it's bollocks. It's no different to vampirism when they used to talk about Dracula in the 18th century and stuff. Mm. It's man-made, idea behind it. Just, there might be some truth to it, but it's not. There's no alien.
Roswell?
No. The only alien is an Aztecian or an Inca on the shore of South America, Central America, and a Catholic coming ashore with a flag and armor. That's an alien.
Mm. Something you don't understand.
It's not a little green man. And it's bollocks. All the stuff they talk about, like, United States couldn't identify this. It's a UFO. That doesn't mean alien. It's an unidentified flying object.
So what is it?
Could be a weather balloon. Could be a new jet being tested. Could be a new drone, like helium balloons.
Mm.
All that silver shit they find in that, it's bollocks.
What's Roswell then? I'm just playing Roswell devil's advocate here.
Roswell, I think it was a staged UFO crash, wasn't it? But it was a helium bloom. It was a weather bloom. That was the real story. But some filmmakers, some gimmicky people, not like Orson Welles, but you remember when he did War of the Worlds, didn't he?
Yeah.
And if you tuned into War of the Worlds and Orson Welles did it before the intro, people genuinely thought there was an alien invasion. People killed themselves.
That is madness, isn't it?
Yeah. People drove around trying to pick up their kids from family and loaded the car with food and spice because they caught a radio show halfway through. He had to have a press conference, didn't he, and talk about it. And he's got this little smile on his face. And then, boom, gets Citizen Kane shortly after.
That's madness, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah.
That was when it was really hot, wasn't it, though? 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 60s. Like, I think it was just... It was like when they used to do seances, I suppose, in the Victorian times. It was so chilling. You'd be taken in by it, but they were all proven to be charlatans.
See, my question is always, like, why would a government go to that extent of making it look like there's something there if there isn't? Is it to control? Is it to be doing something behind those doors that maybe we as a society wouldn't agree with? So that's how that's what they paint it with. So people think, oh, it must be that.
No official.
To distract them. Like, I don't ever understand what's in it for them.
Well, military, Air Force, none of them have ever alluded to saying there's aliens or UFOs. People take things out of context. So a Navy aviator will have footage of him like tracing something that's moving through the sky, and he'll go, I can't identify it. And then the public will take that as proof of aliens, which is just, it's ludicrous.
I think it's a case of people want to believe there's more. don't they?
Well, it's...
We've all got that hunger, that sort of deep, profound sense of we can't be, that this can't be it. There has to be more.
Well, so if there's things beyond what we are now, it means the end of everything. Because if there's one proof, if there's existence of one UFO, every biblical text on earth is invalid.
What if the UFO is Jesus?
Well, then that's religious. That's not an alien.
No, but then they, you can't say that it dismisses religious belief. What if that UFO was an unidentified Jesus?
Well, of course it does, because it gets rid of the Adam and Eve theory, which is the beginning of it all. If they're alien making babies on another planet, having a whole other race, and no, you can't have religion mixed with sci-fi UFOs. That won't work.
No, then you never see those two disciplines of faith tag teaming someone, would you?
You'd never see
a devout Christian with a UFO believer like fighting on the same team.
Well, it happens in Paul, doesn't it?
Yeah,
she's wearing that shirt, doesn't she? Evolve this to Darwin. I think it was a Darwin. Yeah. Evolve this. They're all into their aliens, and she's into religion.
Yeah,
you can't. Yeah, you definitely can't have both.
No. What would you rate No One Will Save You out of 10?
I'm gonna have to give it an 8.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say 7, but I don't know. I think I enjoyed it for... it's refreshing for me. It's very rare you get an alien UFO film that's got the real scares. And I like feeling scared sometimes.
So, can I share something with you?
Mm.
First time I watched it, I gave it a score.
Oh.
That's not groundbreaking news.
That is really big news.
But then second time watching it...
I didn't give it a score.
Changed the score and it went up a fair bit.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Why? What was the mediating factor?
I think because the first watching, I was making notes. So while I found myself glued to the screen for most of it, I did miss little tiny, I'm talking the tiniest of bits, because I had a brain thought and I was like, well, I need to jot this down. Second time I watched it, I was like fully engrossed, nothing to write, just me and the film. I enjoyed it more and I'd give it a 7 out of 10.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I choosing this one for this episode, I was like, I just hope it's not bang average.
You do need to reverse that method, by the way. And I think if we ask general population,
I won't change how I do my
things. Watch the movie first.
I won't change how I do my things.
But you,
I've tried both ways.
But first time watching a film should be the time where you take it all in. Second time you dissect it and write your notes.
Yeah, but
come on.
Do you watch the film twice?
No, I don't.
Well,
I watch it once and then write my ideas.
Thank you, Your Honour.
That's ridiculous.
No, I am who I am and I is who I is.
I am who I am.
That gives No One Will Save You a total score of 15 out of 20. If you like your alien invasion films to be muted, menacing and mostly intriguing, or if you've ever wanted to see stereotypical aliens being all snatchy and sus, then No One Will Save You could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed A Quiet Place, Signs and Don't Breathe. Should we play a game?
Yeah.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
It's about two friends who, not through lack of trying, are always down on their luck and want to change their lives for the better, but they do not want to give up their dreams just to earn money in an office or sell their farts on TikTok. They want to create something they can be proud of. Their dream is to create the most downloaded podcast of all time.
Oh my God.
We follow their 3-year journey of trial and error and sacrifice and arguments and bonding.
Oh, I'm so hard.
The goal in the end should lead them into writing for films and television and then directing and producing their own independent movies.
Oh.
But life's hurdles keep tripping them up.
Oh.
The struggle is the journey to the top.
Oh,
and can they survive the swamps and mountains along the way?
Yeah.
A very first world challenge, but a challenge nonetheless.
Yeah. That is my favourite What the Plot
uh-huh.
I think you've ever done.
Oh, thank you.
Because, spoiler alert, we're those two best friends. We are those podcasters that want to take over the world with our wit and whimsy.
Yeah.
They are us. And I'm thinking, this is going to be so deep in self-sucking.
Go meta.
Well, this is going to be the shortest What the Plot ever, mate.
Yeah.
Because the title is The Popcorn Kernels. Directing it is us, The Popcorn Kernels.
Yes!
And starring in it is me and you as the Popcorn Kernels, but with a twist.
Oh.
I play you, you play me.
Oh, he shoots, he scores.
Let's make it real nasty in here. Yeah, man, I love that idea. Yeah, perfect.
Schneider!
Should we play a game?
Si, senor.
On today's episode, we will be talking about what's popping, people. Welcome to the Popcorn Kernels podcast. If you like your podcast to be fun, factual, and fully focused on the thoughts of film fanatics, or if you've ever wanted to hear songs based on the synopsis of all sorts of cinema, then the Popcorn Kernels podcast could be the podcast for you.
Farewell, film freaks. You have been listening to the Popcorn Kernels podcast. We thank you for joining us on our adventure into the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.